Good afternoon. It's good to be back gathered together again. We're going to start with an introduction. So I've asked the panelists to introduce themselves and to briefly share who they are, what their roles have been in school. I am Rodney Liebold. I taught school for 18 years and have been on the school board for our own church school for about 18 months. So my experience on the school board is much less than the experience in teaching school was. Now, I was also in another school board for a school was starting up for about 3 years before that, so not only 18 months. My wife, Sarah, and I have one son, and we have a dairy farm, so that and on the school board for Fairhaven School. Robert.
My name is Robert Heatwell. I'm from Barwick, Ontario. Late in the last half of the last century, I was school board chairman of the Mennonite School in India. And I taught for 0.28 of a century. And in this present century, I'm school board chairman of the Mennonite School in Rodopi, Bulgaria.
Timothy?
I'm Timothy Gerber from Gads Hill, Ontario, Cedar Grove Church and School. My first role was as a student from 1980 to 1988 at Cedar Grove School, and few times I have substituted, but very limited from that side of the teacher's desk. My role is currently as a pastor, attending school board and board teacher meetings for the past almost 19 years. I'm here with my wife, Mary Beth. We have 12 children, and we're blessed to be here with you today.
And Brother Noah.
So I'm Noah Craybell from Peace River Congregation in Arcadia, Florida. And if you look on a map, you can find it in South Central Florida. I already told you we would give you a warm welcome there. I taught school for 3 years in Pennsylvania. And then that was 2006 to 2009. And then went back to the dairy farm. And then we moved to Florida in 2014, and I taught 4 years there. Currently, I am a farmer and a board member for the past 4 years and school principal for, I believe, 5 years now. We do, my wife Priscilla and I have 5 children, and I had mentioned earlier that 3 are in school, and the other 2 I'm teaching at home. We also have produce and a dairy farm, and we work with raw milk for pets.
Thank you very much. So for the format for the panel discussion, we have several prepared questions, and I'm going to be addressing them to the panelists, and one of them will speak to it for 3 minutes, and the other two have a chance to put in their 10 cents worth for 1 minute afterward then. Before we're doing that, I decided to start with an opening story. Culture is a lot of different things, but basically culture is how we do things. I asked them to think of a story that comes to their mind that illustrates some aspect of culture, good or bad, and to comment on it briefly. I thought of a story myself from my own school teaching days. So we come in from recess time. This was in the skating season, and the young fellows there, grade 4 boys, they were taking off their splash pants, and this one young fellow discovered to his horror that he actually hadn't put splash pants on. So, I mean, he quickly got them on again. A few of us saw that, and we laughed with him, and life went on. But, you know, culture, in some cultures, if you make a mistake, you get mocked and laughed at for a long time afterwards, and it can ruin your day or your week or your school year, whatever. So I was glad to see that good aspect of culture where we could laugh at an honest mistake and then life could move on and no great harm done. So that's one illustration of culture. Robert.
When I was in grades four and five, we had a number of non-member patrons at the school, and a bit of a weaker teacher, I would say, in the upper room. My teacher, he was a good teacher in many ways, but he was maybe a little bit more of the buddy type of teacher instead of the role model type, commanding order and respect and so on. Bring those few things together, and there was a good bit of negative influence among the students. I mean, to us, we had to work through that. There was even such things as bad language in the school. Of course, not the teacher was never supposed to hear that, but some of us heard some of it. Disrespect, not always the same, but some disrespect. Grade 6 and 7, then, was very different. I think there was a little less negative influence coming from the patron homes. From the non-member patrons. We had a strong teacher. He had good control of the classroom, and there was certainly much greater respect. Now, in looking back from this side of it, we might ask the question, what can we learn from that culture, that situation? Like we said, culture is broad. What makes a school what it is? It's difficult sometimes to analyze. But I think we could say that the board at those earlier years should have been a little more attentive to what was going on, what the influences were, and working with those families where, you know, they weren't supposed to have a radio in the home, but did Dad have a radio in the truck that he drove to work? Or doesn't that matter? And so where were those negative influences coming from? And of course, also along with that, the teacher had a tremendous influence in that situation. Like I said, he was strong. He was a role model. When I was in grades 4 and 5, my penmanship was awful, if we shouldn't use that word there, but I will because we often do. Today, my penmanship is very much like my teacher of grade 6 and 7. Why the difference? Various things, but he changed the culture. He had a lot to do with changing that culture.
Thank you. Timothy.
Well, I guess there's many things I could speak to as it pertains to my school years as well, and I'm blessed to be here today and to have experienced the years in school I did. However, I kind of echo what Robert was saying here, that we wonder sometimes where the board was and what was all, as we think of what all went on and so on. I am thankful for where we are today. I don't feel we have arrived, but I think back especially, and I think of things like our school program was very much, our Christmas program, rather, was very much a time of acting out different things, and that was our culture. And you know, again, time brings changes, and as Christians, our culture of necessity must be and will be influenced by the kingdom of God, I believe. And however, we're all influenced by the culture around us. And the Apostle Paul, in 2 Corinthians 6:17, he says that we are to come out from among them and be separate. And God will receive us. I believe it's important that we would consider the Bible giving direction to our culture. I believe we all consider that. As I think further, I'm reminded there was a brother by the name of Kai Steinman from the Marylebone Christian Brotherhood in Berksville, Kentucky. It's a church where the John Esch family was at, that died about 14 years ago, I guess it was. He's an ordained brother, young man. He's a first-generation Christian. And he once preached a message to us at a minister's conference, and it's been a number of years ago. Here's what he said. He says, our culture is a result of living our lives in holiness before God, and as that affects our way of doing things, we are blessed people. He went on to say that those that look in from the outside see something desirable in our culture, and that draws people, which is good. That's how God would want us to be. He says, however, for some people or seekers, all they see is a simple, old-fashioned way of life. They like that. That draws them to us. And, you know, after spending months or even years in our circles, they cool off and they lose interest. And he went on to say the reason they lose interest is because they don't appreciate the means by which we have our culture. In other words, our culture needs to be a result of reading the Word of God, studying in it, living it out in obedience with the brotherhood, and anything less than that will simply just be a subculture of our society. When we come to the kingdom of God, we need to pick up the cross, and we need to serve Him, and we develop by that a culture that is based on the fear of God, and we dare not be apologetic for that culture.
Thank you very much. So culture is how we do things, and Brother Timothy pointed out there's a reason of why we do them. Thank you. Noah.
Sometimes culture is not good or bad. I thought of when I grew up in school, we would play soccer in the wintertime, Pennsylvania, when it was cold, and we would play soccer because we could stay warm playing it. When I moved to Florida, I found out that my school students there didn't really like to play soccer. So I told them that we'll play some soccer in the wintertime when it gets cold. And they said, what? When it's cold, we can't play soccer then. So when it got cold, maybe we had a little frost in the morning and it was maybe in the 40s till first recess. And I said, we're going to play soccer today. They said, we can't, it's just too cold. And the goalie said, she's freezing. And the runners said, our lungs are burning. And I told them, I said, I guess that must be just climate difference. Because we thought that was the way to stay warm. So the next day, I brought pairs of gloves. I went to the hardware store and bought a whole bunch of pairs of those white nylon gloves, neutral. Had a whole stack of them at school, and I just laid them on the table in the back, and I said the next morning, we're going to play soccer again, and if you're cold, why don't you wear some gloves today? Maybe that'll help to keep you warm. And we were able to change the culture some. They still thought it was cold. Of course, for the Northerners, for you, this would have been funny, but it was real to them. It's part of the difference of culture, and I think till the year was done, they had learned to enjoy soccer, but they never forgot playing soccer in the cold, neither right nor wrong.
Thank you very much. We're going to move on into questions now. I am hoping that at the end of our time of prepared questions here, there'll be some time for questions from you too. So the first one I've addressed to Brother Robert, and that is, what's the role of schedule and order in school culture?
Oh dear, was that me that was supposed to talk next? You should have warned me about that.
That was you. I had warned you, Robert. Yeah.
What if I don't have the right paperwork here?
Just do the best you can.
Okay. Well, that's too bad. Now, if I didn't know that was my responsibility to talk next, whose fault was it? He said he had warned me about it. Does it make any difference if we have schedule in our lives? Does it make any difference if there's a pattern or order? Or doesn't it? What if our school days were like that? The teacher was digging around in his briefcase and trying to find his notes. What if this meeting were like that? Did you think about that? How relaxed we can be because we know what's happening next. This morning, Brother Noah was asking me where we're going to be for this panel discussion, up here at the front, or I said, oh, just relax. See, he knew it was going to happen. Order does tremendous things to us. It's tremendously valuable schedule. Remember that pattern reduces pressure. We all need grooves in the road, deep grooves in which we walk. Children need grooves, but we do too. That's one thing that culture is to us. It's grooves in the road, pattern life. The Bible says, let all things be done decently and in order. And remember as well that there can be no variety without schedule. Do you ever think about that? If life were all variety, impossible. You can't have variety unless you first have schedule. And so some teachers want to have all variety. It's chaotic. It doesn't work. Our schools need to be built around order and schedule. A little story. I was traveling one day with a young man from our congregation, a quiet man, quiet young man. He was 17 years old. He had never made a commitment, never become a Christian. We stopped for the night at a motel, went inside. Without me saying a thing, he got out his Bible. He read his Bible. And I thought to myself that his mother must have put chains around his neck. That's what the Bible says, isn't it? There was schedule, there was grooves, there was pattern in his life that he hardly even thought of. He couldn't walk beside it. He just walked in those patterns. And that was a tremendous blessing in his life. Today he is a Christian. And I have good memories of our own three little boys sitting on the couch first thing in the morning. As soon as they could read, they read their Bible. That was a pattern in our home. They'd sit there in the morning and they'd open their Bibles and they'd read their Bibles. Just little boys. Did that make any difference on them? Does that make any difference on them today? Does that pattern help them today when life is terrifically busy? That's just one thing we do first. We read the Bible first.
Thank you. Any comments there, Timothy?
Oh, I appreciate what was said. I feel that truly God is a God of order. And we do well to imitate God. And surely proper school life is going to have order and be conducted on schedule and in an orderly way. I just say amen.
And Noah.
Two comments. One is, if there's no schedule, there's no progress, at least not much. The other one is that schedule is a wonderful servant, but a nasty slave driver. And so learn to use schedule instead of it becoming your slave driver. If you don't have an orderly life, you will bump into schedules in life that will drive you, and it's difficult then to cope with it.
Well, thank you very much. So we'll move on into another question now. This one I'm addressing to Timothy, and that is, so what's the role of love and acceptance in school culture, and considers the negative things like mocking and bullying?
Well, we had good discussion this morning on this. I was blessed also by what was said. As we think of love and acceptance, or love/acceptance, they go hand in hand. We can't love and not accept. Neither can we accept someone for who they are without love, having love for them. And it was made clear this morning that that isn't just toleration like society today has. That's not what we're talking about here. But again, I feel that it's important that our children are taught to respect each other. And I think of the children that said, "Go up, thou bald head. Go up, thou bald head." I think of those children, they learned the hard way. And they got hurt in the process. And I believe it, nothing has changed today. When there's tolerance to mockery and to not accepting, things go bad and children can be ruined and their growth can be stunted for a good part of their life. However, God is faithful and he can help us to overcome and come through those things. If our children don't learn those things, then yes, it's inevitable that they'll also get hurt. We know that God's love is exemplified to others. When we exemplify his love to others, they usually are blessed. And we do well to ask God to help us to be a blessing to others each day. I believe it's proper for us to pray that. And especially for you as school board members, that you would consider asking God to help you to be a blessing to others. And as we think of all of that, and just think of the raging wars that are on this planet at the moment, how different if everyone would love Jesus, or love as Jesus taught, I should say, these wars would cease, would they not? We also believe that some nations provoke others to war by doing what isn't acceptable. And you think about that. So it is with our children or ourselves. How we, you know, if we're always coming across off color and people struggle to accept us, you know, we actually set up ourselves for not being accepted, and that can make it so difficult. Sometimes children are bullied because of unacceptable behavior, and so they need to be taught, I believe, many different angles, especially the law of sowing and reaping comes in here. And I believe the situation becomes more complex when the parents of those being bullied fail to see unacceptable behavior for what it is. You know, I'm talking about when children just can't seem to fit in, and they're maybe bullied. I'm not saying we didn't get there yet. Bullying is always wrong. But we need to teach our children how to fit in and to be acceptable. That's what I'm trying to say here, I guess. Again, bullying should never be tolerated. I appreciate how our board on one occasion handled the situation. And in that situation, there was a grade 8 boy that he wanted to, he was a big fella, and he wanted to pick a fight. And no one was willing to do that. And then the younger ones, or the smaller ones, however you want to say it, they finally agreed they're all going to go together in this. Well, we know that doesn't work. And it didn't, and there was hard feelings and hurts and all this. And I appreciate how the board handled that. You know, my son was one of them, and we were called in. All of us as parents of these boys were all called in, and we sat there and in the schoolroom, and we were given a talk on bullying and accepting, and it wasn't just for the boys, it was for all the parents as well. And I believe it was very successful in coming across to those students, and we stood behind them. I think all the parents, I think, did. It was just a matter of getting things into place. Sometimes those things turn up, but it needs to be handled in the right way, and then I believe the children can go on. We need to remember that our children are not Christians. But as children, they observe what we as parents, how we are, how we respond, how we react, whatever it is. And if it's with love and acceptance, they see that. And if we fail, they also see that. And that gives our children direction. Again, many times I believe children are only imitating what they see in mom and dad. And again, for the teacher, love and acceptance, yeah, there's a lot that could be said here, needs to be, I believe, love and acceptance needs to be on the front burner. I don't think there's anything new. The Apostle Peter made reference in Acts there in chapter 10, verse 34. He says that God is no respecter of persons. How would we feel if God would be a respecter? If he would accept some of us and others not? Love and acceptance, I want to leave this thought, is an attribute of God that of necessity needs to be exercised by his people. And that includes the ministry, the parents, the school board, the teachers, the children, whoever's involved. Love and acceptance is an attribute. And exercising this attribute is what makes our school a Christian school, I believe.
Thank you. Brother Robert, your comment.
Appreciate what was said. I think the teacher's example goes a long ways. We talked about that. Can he accept the underperformer? And also, it's a two-way street. I think that was mentioned. I've ready for school devotions, taped some yardsticks or meter sticks to the bottom of my shoes and walked around the classroom that way. I need a lot of room, right? Don't tramp on my toes. But it goes both ways. They need to accept. Every one of us, one wise man once said, we all have something a little crazy about us. Each person does. So they need to accept my long toes. That's true. But maybe I could trim my toenails sometimes too.
Thank you, Brother Noah.
I guess I was thinking of a sobering back note to bullying and mocking, and that is that the child or children who do this often are hurting in the same way that they've been hurt.
Thank you very much. I don't feel that that question was exhausted yet, but we have some others to look at. First question for you, Noah. You moved from one area to another. So what did you learn about school culture when you moved to a new community?
We moved about 1,000 miles south. We didn't cross the border as you would from Canada, but we did cross the border in South Carolina. There's a place called South of the Border, and that's kind of an unspoken line in contiguous United States where you go from being a Yankee to a rebel. We did find out that the South was warm, the welcome was warm, and the stay was long. We have a little sign hanging in our farm market that says, sit and stay a while. School culture also changed, not only the climate and the community culture. I moved from an 8th grade community in Pennsylvania to a 10th grade community in Florida. And so at 30 years of age, I took up my education and learned 9th and 10th grade curriculum. My Southern students, in their mindset and culture, thought surely that my Northern 8th grade community must be a bit behind their 10th grade Southern community, and that this must be a step up. I told them that actually I think it's fairly comparable and compatible, or at least, were they referencing something about me as their teacher? I only had an 8th grade education. So I would like especially today to lend to you as our Northern brethren our support, whether you have an 8th grade community or a 10th grade, and tell you that either can be sufficient for life. There are a few more things when you move from one school community to another, especially if you're functioning in a position of teaching or administrating, that I'd like to share, things that I am still learning. One is that I needed to learn to understand the community where I've moved to. We've had 10 years running on that, and I'm still learning. Another, I should respect the traditions that were already in place. I'm thinking especially of in the school. Give you an illustration. When we have hot lunch at the school in the South where we attend now, the students have a great secret about who's bringing hot lunch in. In the North, that wasn't our culture. We all knew who was bringing the hot lunch, but that's a culture that we needed to learn to accept. Another thing is that I need to not view myself as the agent of change. Sometimes when we move to a new community, we think, well, here I come, and there'll be some good changes when I get there. Instead, we should learn to understand that we are part of a joint effort. That doesn't mean we shouldn't bring our personality along, or our background, or our strengths, or our weaknesses. But we should understand that we become part of a new church community, a new school community, and that we should be especially willing to run changes that we might make as administration in the new school community. We should be ready to run those changes past the rest of our team to make sure that we wouldn't create a difficulty.
Thank you very much. I don't know, maybe the other panelists feel they're at a disadvantage to respond to this one, but if you have anything to say, Robert?
I thought of what Jesus said when he said, a prophet is not without honor save in his own country. And when I taught 3 years at Colton, and then I moved home, and I was the newcomer, and I was well thought of. But that sort of simmers down after a while, and I became kind of an ordinary person there in my own community where I had grown up. But the students didn't know me very well, but they soon learned to know me. And I guess we come back to the fact of steadiness and not worrying too much about what others think of us, but rather what God thinks of us and his blessing we seek.
And Timothy?
I don't have anything more to add. My roots are quite deep where they are.
Thank you very much. We can't all be moving around all the time. A second question now for Robert. Can we develop anything in our school culture to prepare students for the adult world?
With this question, I probably will be leaning heavily on my teaching experience more than on my board experience. A few things I thought of. One is we can teach them to settle their own disputes promptly and not to hold grudges. Games, we know what happens. There's a little dispute about who had power or what's going on, and then you see the two boys separate with frowns on their faces, and you ask them how it went, and they don't really have much to say, and, well, I thought he was caught, and, well, do you know what he's thinking? No, go talk to him. I don't really care so much how it turns out as far as who goes caught, but I care that you fix it. You don't just go on in life, and we know, because we know how that feels in church life when that same thing happens, right? It does not work. We have to settle things. We have to talk it through. Another thing that we can help our students is to manage their time. Grades 9 and 10, I enjoyed teaching grades 9 and 10, but I limited my help with them more. Sometimes I said I was an inspirer and a tow truck driver. And we enjoyed it. But they had to man their own schedule. So the beginning of the year, they had the year's schedule laid out, so much this week, next week. They had to run their own schedule and learn the hard way, if not before, that it's best to eat the potatoes with the gravy. So you do all the fun stuff first in the week, eat the gravy all, then you got the dry potatoes last. That's up to you. And so they soon learn how to manage their time. And there was one girl that thought it was just kind of awful how I treated her. I mean, not really, but she felt a little bit like we took her out in a boat and tipped the boat and said, wish you well. But by the end of partway through the second year, she wanted to take on a study of her own. And she came to me one day and said, will this schedule work? She had done the whole thing, mapped out her. Was I ever glad I had tipped the boat? That's just what she needed. Another thing I think we should teach our older students is that you know how to act. Whenever my grades 9 or 10 students made trouble, I said, I'm not going to waste time. You've been in my classroom for how many years? You know how to act. If you don't, we'll talk to Dad. And I almost never had to talk to Dad. They knew that road didn't work well. And so they did what they were taught. You know how to act. Be friendly, of course. Use diplomacy. Life is mostly subjective as opposed to objective. And sometimes good grading students, as they come up through, have to shed some tears because they can't get as good of grades as they used to. Well, does your dad get good grades, I would ask him? That's the way life is. It's not objective. How do you grade your work and your work on the dairy farm or whatever? We don't get grades, so they need to learn that in life. It's just the way it is. And aim to understand. I always love to watch my students coming up through, and they want to know how to do something instead of being so picky about the 98 3/4%. And that becomes a culture. I've sensed that in other schools where the drive is to get that last bitty of a percent. In my culture, I didn't want that. I wanted them to want to know. How do you make it a culture? That would take me 45 minutes. But stop paying so much attention to the grade. Don't overcorrect mistakes. What is a mistake? Just means I have another chance to learn. Try it again. Teach them again. And I think that's an important concept for them to take with them through life. Like I said, the grading thing needs to fall behind as they get older. We need it. But as they get older, it should fall behind, and we should be more interested in, did I get it? Sometimes I'd be barely done checking, and somebody's hand was up and say, I know what I did wrong. Great. That's what I wanted. I wanted them to get it. Whether they got it yesterday, too bad you didn't, but you got it today. That's where we want to be.
And Timothy, anything about life lessons, getting ready for the adult world?
Oh, I think it was well covered. I believe it's very important that there is a working together atmosphere in school, because that is what will carry through or won't carry through if it isn't there into church life. And yeah, we need to view the importance of other people's input in our lives. And have I achieved or attained that? I wouldn't say I have. I'm learning myself yet. But it is a blessing when we can hear what others have and have that working together. And yeah, I appreciate what the brother shared.
Thank you, Noah.
I was thinking about the world we live in and the opportunity we have to teach our students that life, school life, and adult life is not competing against each other. Now, that's a little hard to teach them when the political environment we live in today is all competition. But I'll give you an illustration. In our upper grade classroom right now, the upper graders are making a popsicle stick bridge. They have a certain amount of glue and 100 popsicle sticks, and they're teamed up in pairs of two, and they're supposed to build the strongest bridge they can. So my seventh grade son is paired with one of the other boys, and my ninth grade daughter with one of the other girls. And of course, the first thing that came out in the competition was, it's not fair because the girls won't have a chance. So I sat down with my daughter and said, I'll help you design it. Let's design it, and then you can build it. They were allowed to do that. They had permission to get any input they wanted. Son had asked another older single man in the community if he could give him some ideas on how to build. And this was a machinist, so he was putting his brain to it for real. And he sent him some papers. And my son said, oh, no one else can see them. And I said, wait, we need to have a little talk. This is not about competition. This is about doing the best job you can. And so we had a little discussion about that. And I told them that I think we're missing the point if competition is to come out on top. Why? Because in life, if we're only happy when we come out on top, this is going to be a tough world to live in.
Thank you very much. Two final questions we'll be considering now before you have opportunity. I'm going to be asking Timothy first of all then to talk about what you see as the role of the school board specifically in shaping school culture, and then Noah, what he sees as the role of the principal. So there are two very related but a little bit different questions. So what can the school board members do, Timothy?
Well, I believe the school board member is very, very, very responsible party in shaping school culture. I mean, in our setting, I appreciate many times how things are handled and how that they take interest in keeping things lively and fun. They have their birthday parties for the teachers, and they have their, you know, all the other special things and events that they do and so on. And I can't enumerate them all now, but you know, it's important that they're involved in those little things, because the reality is that they will get into the meat and potatoes of what real school life is. And you know, the school board member is set up by the church, at least in our setting, to administrate the work of this arm of the church. And I believe they're accountable to God, to the ministry, to God, however you want to say that, for the culture that develops in school. And that's sobering. To me, that's sobering. We are responsible. We will need to answer for our actions someday. And I know that the board has all the other responsibilities of all the everyday nuts and bolts and things of running the school, from the board side of things especially. But if he will be exercising his responsibility in the fear of God, he will need to be a man of God. And I think we heard that this morning as well already. I appreciated that. And if we're a man of God, we're going to need to crucify our flesh and humbly walk before God. We must draw nigh to God, and then God will draw nigh to us. That's just simply how it works. And in our personal life, we need to be clear with God, with the church, with our spouse, however, whoever, in life. We need to be men of integrity. And this all might seem like a tall order as you consider yourself as a school board member, but God will draw nigh to those that draw nigh to him. And he won't let you sit. As a school board member, if you seek the Lord and the difficult things that come your way, and those things will give direction to the culture of the school, how you work through them, don't feel defeated. There's actually others on the board with you. And in our situation, there's five brethren, plus we as ministry take turns and so on to be there and so on. But sometimes a teacher might need correction. And difficult things like that come along, and depending how we look at it, it can be just a whole lot more difficult than it actually is if we just roll up our sleeves and do it. What I wanted to say is that God always enables those he calls. And he'll never let you sit. If your church has elected you to be a school board member, God's not going to let you sit, and you have each other to depend on. The most important thing is, again, that you come together in teamwork. Again, it also means giving up of oneself to the others and supporting each other to the greater cause. A greater cause than any of us can do, and that is advancing the kingdom of heaven. And therefore, each board member's role is to lose his identity in Christ, and then he will perform his role in shaping school culture.
Thank you very much, Robert. Do you have any response?
I would just say that trust goes a long way. When the board trusts the teachers, they can feel that trust. It gives confidence. When you can include the teachers in decisions, sometimes even a board will say, well, what do you think? Of course, I'm speaking from a perspective where some of us had taught school for many years, but the board would sometimes ask us that. It made us feel included. It made that mutual trust develop, which I think is very useful.
Noah?
Just one comment. As board members, we be wise men to keep mostly the board discussion happening in the joint meeting. By that I mean this. Maybe your brother serves on the school board, or your cousin, or your friend. And so there's this tendency that when it's not board meeting time, maybe you and I are discussing things on the side, and we come to board meeting with, you know, we got two heads together already. It's not that there's never a place for some discussion, but most of that must take place in the joint board meeting for this to pull together as a team. Else there will be factions.
Thank you very much. And so now, Noah, what about the principal? What can he do for shaping good school culture?
Well, the principal comes in a little more directly in focus because he or they, in our school at least, we have two. We are elected for 2 years at a time. The first year we serve as assistant to the previous one, who is on his second year as the main. But these two become the iconic representation of the school. That also means we are in full view. Things happen. We are the first ones that get the fire. And so I would especially say that the mentality of the school principals, plural, will be directly reflected by the teacher team, especially if he or they both would serve for multiple years with the same multiple year teacher team. And so there's another side of it to where we all just come into a school culture, and so there's some safety in that and some responsibility in that, where we just add our influence to what has been there. But we best consider the trajectory of where we are pointing the arrow. And we best consider the trajectory of where it was when we came on and where it's going to be when we go off, because it will make a long-term influence. It's true, the principal won't overhaul the culture in just a year or two, but he will have a definite effect. And even if you only would serve for a short time, might the trajectory have a strange weave in it? Question for us. We must be very careful with the direction of influence we give to the school. This is not my school. This is our school. I'll give you an illustration. The principal and teacher team in this specific arrangement might push for singing. Not wrong, but it does set a tone. Or maybe for good mathematics. Or when I was teaching, we had shop class the years that I taught, and that ended when I quit teaching. And I came to realize, when I switched from teacher to principal, that it was the combination of teacher and principal that made that a good arrangement, and it wasn't necessarily a good arrangement in the next phase. And so we have to both consider the trajectory and also be willing to subject the trajectory to the group voice. And so be very careful of personal biases that might come in as a principal.
Thank you very much, Robert.
I have not very much experience in that role as principal. I was the school principal, but I did not have nearly that weight of responsibility. That's cultural to what the principal all is supposed to do. So it was different. But I think one thing that needs to be remembered, I've learned, and that is, whether your board chairman takes that place of listening to the teachers or whether it's the principal, don't easily brush off the junior teacher's challenges. Sometimes that can happen without us knowing what's happening. Well, it's just a little first grader here. Just do this and this and get him to take a few stickers home and probably be all fixed. But it's just as big a problem to her as what the 9th and 10th grader is or the 8th grader. Don't brush them off. And I also think communication is so essential. As teachers, we almost always after school talk together and greatly reduced the amount of discipline problems. I think the board sometimes wondered what to do with us because there weren't enough problems to solve. That's not said. I speak as a fool. But what I'm saying is it was because of that we as a teacher team, were helping each other. And so some teacher might say, did you see what he did today about my student? Well, then I better wake up and listen and do something about it. So we were helping each other as a team.
Thank you very much. And comment from you, Brother Timothy.
I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have a question? Yes.
I would have one more comment to give. In that school culture where we as principals carry the main weight of the day-to-day school responsibility, it is very important for the principal team to communicate with the board. So when we have board meeting, because the chairman is my other principal, I end up giving the board report, but I share a principal report to the board is what I meant to say. A principal report at every board meeting, and I always get it seconded by my fellow principal. Did I cover what we covered? Make sure that we're being fair and honest and open.
And simply, once again, a culture, the way we do things becomes a culture. If you switch how you do it, it becomes a different culture. But there is great value in operating within your expected culture, certainly. So thank you very much for your attention, and thank you to the panelists for being willing to share, and we'll turn the time back to Eli.